You are now joining Children of the Watch.
That's right. It's the number one podcast in the galaxy for all things Star Wars television. I'm your host, Alex Maxwell. And joining me as always is
Mac Lacey. Alex, we are back. We're a little bit later than we anticipated being on getting this out, but I'm glad we're finally getting to sit down and talk. It's actually working out kind of well just with the way that the story arc was structured.
Yeah.
I feel like this week, with, you know, Andor chapter 10, mm-hmm. That's a great spot, I think, to have this discussion.
Absolutely.
And I can't wait. This is my favorite Star Wars story arc, maybe.
It's so good. I didn't realize how badly I wanted a prison break type thing in Star Wars. I think we've seen it before in the Clone Wars. I'm pretty sure that we have.
Yeah.
But not like this.
And I mean, we've seen people escape from captivity and things like that.
Oh, yeah, you know? It's in the original Star Wars. You know,
right,
it's in its
Star.
DNA.
Right. But certainly not to this degree. And... man, I love everywhere that we went with the story arc.
It was incredible. Obviously, we'll be talking episodes 7 through 10. Episode 7 was almost like a setup for this arc. That's how that episode really was structured. And then 8, 9, and 10 are its own arc. So we're going to be talking about all four of those episodes, but instead of doing like breakdowns of, okay, we're going to start with 7 and then work our way all the way up to 10, I think I'm trying to think, okay, what would I want to listen to? I think mostly you guys probably want to hear us talk about this last episode, One Way Out. Let's go. So we're going to talk about that the most. Now we'll talk about like what led them to these events, and we'll try to talk about it more in terms of story arcs within these four episodes. So we'll focus on Cassian and the prison outbreak aspect and just talk about that, and then move on to like Cyril and Deidre, talk about that, talk about Mon Mothma and Coruscant. And then I'd like to finish the episode talking about Luthen, because what an incredible little monologue he had at the end of this episode, Mac. Oh my gosh.
Oh my goodness. I had goosebumps. I was like almost in tears.
Yeah.
It was, man, it was moving. It was riveting. It was heartbreaking. It was everything. So we'll definitely go over all of that.
Lonnie and Luthen.
Lonnie?
Lonnie is the guy. Lonnie's the mole in the ISB.
Yeah, he almost looked like General Hux.
A little bit. There is a resemblance there.
That might just be red hair bias. I don't know.
It totally is, but, you know, but there is a resemblance there. Lonnie's just a guy that, you know what, I think I got too far into this. I don't know if I'm going to do this anymore. And Luthen's like, I got news for you, buddy.
Yeah, I don't think great things are coming Lonnie's way.
No, or Luthen's.
Or Luthen's, but I think Luthen is far more prepared for that than Lonnie.
He straight up said, like, hey, I'm going to die, and you probably will too. But we'll get to that, and we'll talk about what that really means for like to have people like that for rebellion, and like how that kind of shapes our perspective on what the Rebel Alliance forms into and becomes with like Luke Skywalker and Leia and Han Solo and stuff. Of like, the foundation was built by people like Luthen and Cassian, who were doing the dirty work, and then people like Luke and Han and Leia get to reap the benefits of that dirty work and not necessarily have to do the same sort of things.
They get to be heroes and they don't have to do what Luthen talks about at the end of that episode with kind of discarding their decency and everything like that.
Exactly. And then of course, I mean, we're going to be talking about Andy Serkis's performance in these last three episodes. Just phenomenal.
Killer. Yeah. Just like, one of the more visceral performances I've seen on screen lately.
honestly, I feel like this should be nominated for something. Like this deserves some sort of Emmy nomination in my mind. It's just like, especially that speech, the whole thing. And again, we're going to get to it, but it was just, I mean, I was floored about how much in panic I was watching that whole sequence. Like I was feeling the panic that I think the prisoners were feeling. And that's just a testament to the creators, directors, actors, writers, all of them. I mean, they all it worked in perfect unison to create real raw emotion in me as I was watching, especially this last episode, episode 10.
Yeah, what a fantastic job they did of conveying what the prisoners and you know, our hero Cassie and everything are feeling and experiencing through the way we take those sequences in. Like, I know we talked about it a lot on the Patreon episode that we just did, the bonus Patreon. And we talked a lot about episode 8, particularly on
episode 7 and 8 in the last
7
two,
and 8, yeah. So if we'll probably skim over that one a little bit more, but if you're interested in hearing more about what we had to say about those two episodes, check out that Patreon bonus episode. Short little plug there.
Patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch.
There you go. Yeah. But I think and we've kind of had some we've chased some rabbit trails, but let's get into the structured discussion.
Yeah. So let's start with, I actually had Cyril and Deirdre first, but let's talk about Cassian in the prison.
Let's get to the meat,
and then we'll talk about the fun little stuff after that. But like, okay, so what leads Cassian to the prison? Obviously, after the Aldani mission, he goes back to Ferrix and he meets with Marva, and they have this really touching scene of like he wants Marva to come with him, but Marva's like full into the rebellion, especially after hearing about Aldani, and he doesn't tell
and,
her.
Yeah. Isn't that smart, I think?
It was like, okay, so like going into the prison when he's captured on that beach planet, resort planet thing, and the K2 droids and stuff, obviously he's getting the idea of like, these droids are super helpful and handy. Maybe I need one.
For sure.
And he's going by the name Keef Gurga, which I've started to introduce myself to people as Keef Gurga. I thought for like the whole day when that episode first came out that it was Keith.
Like, yeah.
Real world Keith.
Keith is at least like not just a first name that people have. It's at least a little Star Warsy, but Keith. Yeah. It's like the guy in Game of Thrones that's just named Kevin. Like there's a Kevin Lannister, and everyone else is like Tywin and Ednard
Titus
and like all these like.
And then here's our cousin Kevin.
Oh yeah, and then Kevin over there. That's how I was feeling about
Keith.
It's kind of
It's me, Keith Gurga. I'm just here to get some pizzos for my girlfriend.
You know, I'm
not trying to cause any trouble. My name's Keith Gurga. Obviously, I'm not trying to cause any trouble because of my name.
Yeah, I'm just trying to send it with the boys. You know what I'm saying?
Just trying to get some pizzos, some yummy pizzos. I thought it was really ironic and funny that because of what he did on Aldani, he gets a harsher sentence that sends him to that prison.
Yeah.
And so he gets 6 years for it. And we learn throughout this whole prison sequence thing
meaningless.
That it's meaningless because they're just regurgitating them through the system anyway. Whether they're sending them to a totally different prison or just different levels of the prison, we find that out later. It doesn't really matter like where they sentence you. Now, we talked about this a little bit on the Patreon, Mac, but this seems to be a human-only prison, and I think it's because of the biology of the way that the floors work and the prison works and stuff. But we also talked about like if the EU stuff still stands, the Empire's not very friendly to alien species like that are not human. So
yeah,
they get the worst end of the deal. Like just think about where we found Chewbacca in Solo. He was in a mud pit being forced to kill people.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. You would not you would have aliens in there if that was a representative population, you know, to the galaxy. But
so interesting. I don't know if you thought about this, Mac, but when they're being transported to Narkeena 5, which is where the prison is, the way that they're separated and then how they have to take their shoes off just reminded me a lot of the Holocaust. Like kind of what Nazi Germany did, like especially the shoes thing. Like they made them throw all their shoes in the middle and stuff. And it was just like based on physical ability, like, okay, you guys go here. Obviously, you can't do this. You go here.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, this system has never been about justice or keeping public safety or anything like that. The Empire wants free labor, and that's what this is. And yeah, there's a lot of parallels to, I mean, the Empire has always been space Nazis.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's those, you know, historical parallels, and then there's parallels to, you know, our current prison systems. I mean, this whole sequence is a big commentary on how, like, private prisons are basically just extracting free labor from people, a lot of whom probably don't need to be there.
Yeah. What do you think that they're making? Because I was, for a second, I was like, they're just making conference tables for the Death Stars, but it seemed like there's some... I saw one theory that I really liked. That they're making, like, not hinges. I don't know if hinges is the right word, but basically, like, where the radar dish and the Death Star curves, like, they're making these things that help it curve, basically, physically putting that together.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely tend to think they're Death Star components just because I imagine every shady thing that the Empire is doing is kind of all leading to that ultimate goal, you know?
Yeah, right.
Like that's all, everything's always working towards a Death Star.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. So that's, yeah, I tend to.
It's something with the Death Star, right? Probably not conference tables, but it could be. I mean, yeah. I would imagine a Death Star the size of a moon would need a lot of conference tables. That's just me.
For sure. They also looked like they could be, I mean, they were like hinged joints.
You're right.
And
yeah.
So, something with TIE fighters is what I was thinking, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. It could be anything. But
yeah.
They do later say, they talk about how, like, whatever we're making, the Empire needs, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's important. Like, that's where a lot of the prisoners' eventual power comes from, is the fact that they know that the Empire needs them, you know?
I would not be surprised if we see either later, like, in these last two episodes of Andor, or next season, because the prison was overtaken and they stopped working and stuff, it results in a rebellion victory because, like, they didn't have the components that they needed or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's why they just left that exhaust port open. They were making exhaust port door hinges is what they were constructing. And then they did not make any more and they could not cover all the exhaust
ports. And Galen Erso was like, this is the perfect out right here.
This is it, right? This is the one.
I've been doing my research. There was something that happened on Narkeena 5. Not enough hinges. Here we go. Yeah.
That's my bet. They're exhaust port hinges.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about Kino Loy, which is the character being played by Andy Serkis. And of course, when we first saw Andy Serkis, everyone had their Snoke theories. And I can proudly say that I think my Snoke theory still works based on what happened in this episode.
Yeah.
I'm proud of it.
For sure.
It's ridiculous and it's probably not true. But I mean, just to give you the quick lowdown, if you want to go that route, we can.
Let's do it.
Snoke is made of Palpatine DNA. Grogu DNA, I'm getting this from nowhere except like just putting pieces together. And then Kino Loy DNA, they strand all those DNAs together, stretch them out a little bit. Boom, you got Snoke. The reason they take Kino Loy's DNA is because they punish him and torture him for leading that revolt.
So he doesn't eventually go the way of the lemming?
I don't think he jumps. I don't think that he jumped.
You don't think he gets pushed?
I don't know. I really don't know what happened to him. I don't know.
I kind of got the feeling that was the end of his story, but
I do too. I don't. And that's what I'm saying. I don't think he jumped. I think he like stayed behind.
He went in a cell somewhere when they eventually caught him, or
yeah, I don't know. Or they kill him. Yeah, something. Not good. But yeah, I think that's the end of his character. But just to say, like, Andy Serkis's performance, number one, we just got to talk about, like, what a great addition it was to have him in Star Wars, not play, like, a digital character. Like, that's what he was known for originally with Gollum, and, you know, he did it with Snoke. But and just to have his physical performance was incredible.
Yeah, it like, kind of sucks that he's so good at the motion capture stuff. I mean, he's like a pioneer in that regard. But like, it sucks because we don't get him in, you know, we don't get his actual likeness as often as we would. And he's such a good performer.
He's so visceral, especially in this past episode, episode 10, like when he's given that speech and he's just like snarling. Man, like, I saw a little bit of Gollum come out, okay? Yep. I saw a little bit of Gollum, but man, it was just like, I feel everything that he's saying. Like, everything that he's saying is like, yes, you're right. Like, even when he's, when Cassian first comes in and he meets him and he's in charge of the floor that they're on, right away, I mean, like, you're like, okay, he's in charge, you do what he says, and like, he just gives off that vibe that, okay, he's keeping things on time because obviously he's thinking, if, you know, I've got 200 something days left, right, in my sentence, and I make sure everything goes correctly, I can get out of here. Now, what's really interesting about his character, we have nothing to go off of besides his actions from these three episodes. Like, we don't know why he's there. We don't know what he's done before. And we obviously don't know what happens to him afterwards. But the impression that he makes in these three episodes is such a huge one to Star Wars, in my opinion. Like, man, this dude helped. I mean, like, if he didn't get Cassian out, Death Star plans don't get out to Luke Skywalker and Leia and Han.
Right.
Like, Kino is a huge part of that.
And he was just on the verge of not playing that part all the time. And that's what made it so compelling to watch. I've never seen moral conflict play out so well on someone's face. Just through the manipulation of his facial muscles, I saw like every internal process that was happening.
He's an expert at it. I mean, he's just incredible. Like, I mean, obviously, Diego Luna, Stellan Skarsgård's bringing it. I mean, everybody in this show is bringing it, right? But Andy Serkis brought it, right? Like, Andy Serkis, dude, if you're listening, we love you. Thank you for being in Star Wars. Can't wait to see you in the sequel to The Batman. We need more Alfred in that movie. But just a great character, right? Like, you see the gradual transformation. We even talked about this in the Patreon episode. We kind of had a little back and forth of like, is Kino going to help them get out, or is he going to be the foil to stop them? And like, just if Olaf, the older man who ended up having a stroke and dying, if that didn't happen to him, and then they had that conversation with the med tech, he totally would have stopped them from doing what they were doing, you know, because he didn't want to ruin his chances. But I really love that conversation that they have, Cassian and Kino, where like Kino's kind of worried to talk about it out loud. And Cassian's like, nobody's listening. Like, nobody cares even what we talk about because they're so in charge. They don't even like, we're not even on their radar. We're not even like human or alive to them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's wild. There are so many different things that the whole prison plot makes me think of, like things that I see like from my life in playing out in the prison, I guess, you know? Like, I mean, like, I think there's a lot of parallels to the American workplace. Like, Kino bought into the idea that, like, as long as he was, you know, giving it his all and everything, like, he would be rewarded eventually. And, yeah, like, to some degree, that wasn't going to happen. I feel like that's kind of a way that, like, you know, some entities can take advantage of people. And
absolutely.
Then, and so just, like, to watch him kind of become aware of his situation, like, so much had to happen to knock him out of that, to kind of, like, wake him up out of that dream, you know?
And it's just really interesting, like, prison is a theme of these last three episodes, whether it's talking about Cassian in the prison or not. I mean, you get it with Cyril, right? Yeah. He's in his own kind of prison. We'll talk about that. We get it with Mon Mothma. She's in her own kind of prison, right?
She's in
her marriage.
Few different kinds of prisons.
And then, of course, like, when Luthen ends this episode, this latest episode, with what he talks about, he is in a prison that he's happily in. And yeah, he's like, this is my sacrifice to be here and do everything that I'm doing. So, like, prison, it reminds me of that line in Rogue One, whenever Cassian gets back in prison with Saw Gerrera, and then Chirrut says, "I sense that you carry your prison wherever you go."
Yeah.
And part, yeah, now that line has a different meaning based on these last three episodes too, right? Like, even like, for the sure, memories of what he went through, even in that prison, he's still carrying with him.
Yeah. And then also, I think Luthen gave us insight into that prison as well, because, you know, that, like, by the time we meet the Cassian from Rogue One, he's made a lot of the same choices that Luthen has. You know, he hasn't made those yet in the show, I don't think.
Right.
But I think eventually everything Luthen says at the end of the last episode says, you know, it applies to Cassian.
Yeah. So, okay, let's talk about the prison itself and, like, in terms of how it's structured. It's got the different layers to it, and they, when Cassian gets there, he immediately kind of notices that a lot of the workers on his level are communicating with a different level with hand signals, and they're talking and just kind of keeping each other updated. And it's something that Kino Loy doesn't, I mean, he's like almost okay with them doing it, but, like, he doesn't believe any of the information that they're getting. He's believing the information that's coming through his channels and stuff. And he's, yeah, like you said, he's super resistant to everything until we see the older man, whose name is Olaf. He's struggling. I mean, in those first two episodes of this arc, obviously he's struggling. And you can see Cassian and Melshi, who's also in Rogue One. That's a really cool thing. Like, he's the one that Cassian is with at the very end of the episode. Like, it's them, yeah, two. He is in Rogue One, and he goes to Scarif as well. He's kind of a more of a background character, but it's really cool that they pay that close attention and have a character like that be part of Cassian's origin, and we get to see that. That's just really cool, yeah, in my opinion.
And that does make me, that kind of sends my mind thinking about what's going to happen next for Cassian if they're together.
Yeah.
When maybe, you know, the rebellion comes and finds them or something like that.
Interesting. So Olaf struggling. That actor, by the way, you know, this is crazy because it's like, I realize I'm getting older now, but he is the guy in the first Batman movie with Michael Keaton when Batman first appears and he, like, pulls the guy up to him and says, "I'm Batman." And the guy's, like, freaking, yeah, out. He's like, "Oh my God." That's Olaf. That's the old guy.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I never would have put that together, but
I know,
that's
because
awesome.
Like, that's a young guy in my mind. It's like, oh my God, I'm getting older. So yeah, Olaf is struggling, and I love how, like, everyone's trying to take care of him, but still meet the quota. Like, oh my gosh, what do we do here? And you've got Cassian. Obviously, they've started to come up with a plan, and he's been trying to saw through the bathroom stall thing to get the water out. And you can see the plan coming together. And when someone new comes down, they realize, okay, it's not electrocuted up there. If we can get to the platform, we should be good. So you see all that happening. But then when Olaf has a stroke and the med tech comes in and confirms that, oh yeah, the hand signals that you got about level two being totally fried, 100% accurate. They were all killed because there was a mix-up. Someone from level four ended back down there, and they all rebelled. And so they just killed them all.
Yeah.
And like, I love how the not this past episode, but episode nine ends with Cassian asking about the guards, how many guards are on this level. He asked again. And then when Kino answered, never more than 12.
Let's go.
So good.
I was like, I'm about to take a lap. That was, oh man. That was the best ending line of any episode of television, maybe ever.
It was so good, especially because, like, I feel like the Andor episodes haven't ended quite like a television episode should, and that one totally did.
And that was one instance where I noticed the medium, because the next episode, he was still kind of back on the fence, even though, like, at the end of that episode, he was all in, seemingly, you know? So they kind of did some TV magic where they rewound slightly after they showed you where eventually the episode was going to go.
Yep.
But I don't think that's, like, a bad thing. That's just a way to keep the same tension going, to keep momentum going, like...
So, like, I noticed that this morning, too, when I was watching this episode called... One Way Out. It seemed like he started to backtrack, like, oh, wait a second, maybe we shouldn't do this. But I just love how the plan comes together, right? When they get a new worker starting to come down, Cassian goes back there, and he's just sawing away, and he gets all wet and stuff. And, man, there's a lot of water in those pipes because that flooded pretty quickly. But they are underwater, too. You got to keep that in mind, I guess, too.
Yeah, there's pressure.
There's a lot of pressure, but I just love how, like, they're holding the weapons behind their backs and stuff as the elevator's coming down. And then when Kino yells attack,
Oh yeah, gosh,
it was just incredible. I felt really bad when, you know, those workers and prisoners were getting shot and stuff. And, even the dude that was coming down started fighting. I thought that was awesome. Like, he wasn't, like, hiding. He's like, yeah, heck yeah, I'm going to you too.
Yeah, he was immediately in. He was like, I showed up on a fantastic day.
This is the best day. I don't even have to be here. I'm going to fight you.
Yeah.
Cassian needs to be a faster climber if he's going to be successful in the rebellion. Well, I guess we see that in Rogue One, too, right? He's climbing.
He climbs pretty well in Rogue One. Maybe he practices. Also, to be fair, does not have any shoes.
He doesn't. he doesn't.
I will say the one aspect of Diego Luna's performance I will critique a little bit is I don't think he's the best physical actor, like, when it comes to, like, fight scenes and stuff. His punches are a little awkward to me, but,
and maybe that's on purpose though. It could be like Cassian's just not there yet. I don't know.
Yeah, that's possible.
Maybe that's why he prefers to shoot people instead.
maybe that's the case. Yeah.
I don't know.
But otherwise, I've really, really enjoyed Diego Luna's performance.
Yeah. Just really, really good. And then when they start storming all the levels and stuff and freeing all the other prisoners,
there's so many different instances where you can see people's faces light up for the first time, that they see light at the end of the tunnel. There's hope for the first time in however long, you know? And I love that there were so many different instances for that to happen. Like, you see, there's some people who are struggling with it, and, like, they're telling themselves, you know, we're already dead. Either way, might as well go out fighting. But you can tell people are struggling with it. Some folks are taking to that idea a lot faster than others. But even just, like, while they're still in the room, like, the first room, there's different points during that whole conflict where you can see people start to get it. And it becomes real for different people at different times. It was just... that whole sequence was so just, like, triumphant and celebratory, and it was
when they get to the actual like headquarters where the creepy guy on the microphone actually doesn't have a creepy voice, it's just like random dude, and they take over.
it's like the wizard behind the curtain kind
of deal. That was what it was like. And then like it to me, it was like, oh my gosh, this feels really like very close to the original trilogy. Just that whole it felt like that. But then when Cassian was like, okay, you need to go over the intercom, like it needs to be you, and that hesitation from Kino, and then he finally starts talking, and I just love what he, like some of the lines he said, I'd rather die trying to take them down than die giving them what they want. And like he's I don't know, he's just really good at speeches. Like obviously he's the opposite of Cyril Karm in what we saw in episode 3. And then he says, if we can fight half as hard as we've been working, we will be home in no time. And like he just inspires everybody. Everybody's like, let's go. And you can see all the dots like converging. Yeah.
From everywhere. It's the whole prison. Yeah. Just the whole joints busted.
Just
out.
Great. And then like they get to the point where they're about to jump out and exit, right? Again, CGI looks, it's on another level.
Oh yeah, this show. It's because like you have like 4 CGI shots an episode.
Okay, so even the hallway scenes in this escape though, where they're like pew pew at each other and firing the blasters, it felt movie quality. Whereas like in The Mandalorian, I'm thinking season 2 when they go back to Greef Karga's planet, Nevarro, and they're in that Imperial base.
Yeah.
Similar type sequence, but obviously this one felt like a movie. Like this one felt like a movie. Just, I don't know, the quality is just so much better consistently. But then they get to the part where they're about to jump and stuff, and they're all jumping out and stuff. How heartbreaking was it when they look back and Kino's like, I can't swim. Like, he did all this. He got them all there, and then he can't even go with them.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, yeah, that moment was, it was heartbreaking, but it also, like, I do think you saw, yeah, sure, you saw, like, loss and grief on Kino's face in the moment, but you also
laughed a little bit, too. He's like,
Like everyone was already saying, they were dead anyway, you know? And at least now, like Cassian says, like, no matter what, we made it here, you know?
One way out. I love that. I just love that whole sequence. They're all shouting, one way out, one way. It was just so good. I hope Kino survived and he lived a happy life and was not tortured by the Empire and used his DNA to become Snoke. I hope that was the case. But I don't know. I agree with you, Mac. I don't think we see him again.
Yeah, I think that's the end of his story, and I think it should be the perfect spot. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it should be. So any, and then of course it ends the whole episode, this last episode, No Way Out or One Way Out, ends with Cassian and Melshi. They made it to land. I don't know how far they had to swim, but I'm assuming pretty far. This planet does not look great. It looks like the Upside Down in Stranger Things, and they're just running. I don't know how just those two paired together, but like if I'm one of the swimmers and I see the dude who like got us out, I'm following him.
Yeah.
Why is there just Melshi? Like, why didn't more people follow Cassian? Like, I'd be like, that's the guy we got to follow. He did this.
I mean, it could just be like a scenario where nobody can see land or anything when they get out there, and so they're just like, we're all just gonna swim in a direction,
scatter.
It's, you know, I would also imagine they would want to spread out when they got out, rather than staying in one big
clump,
strafable group. Like, in
here
a
comes
TIE
a TIE fighter.
Yeah. So
I don't know. I'm really interested to see, like you said, how do they get off this planet? And then obviously both of them have contact with the rebellion. I'm guessing Luthen picks them up.
I would assume, but Yeah, I don't know. Deidre might be kind of closing in as well. So,
I'm glad you said her name.
We'll talk with her about her a while.
Right now.
Right now? Okay, we're moving on to the...
Yeah, so let's talk about Cyril and Deidre. I feel like we can combine those two storylines and talk about them because obviously they intersect in a very creepy way.
Oh, yeah.
What is wrong with Cyril, first of all?
I mean, I think like Cyril is a snapshot of like a real life issue and kind of like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways in which like his disenfranchisement or supposed or like perceived disenfranchisement as far as like losing his job, not, you know, having his mom kind of disappointed. Just berate him. There's like all these things that I think there are like a lot of, like in men particularly, that struggle with that kind of stuff, just because like
our identities are a lot of time tied to what we do.
Right. And this, like, he's obviously got this thing where he's constantly saying like, we have laws for a reason. He's very like law and order, and you kind of get the, if I was in charge, I'd you know, have a iron fist kind of thing. And then I think he also feels entitled to female affection in a wild way that is, if you've been on the internet, reflective of the real world, sadly.
Okay. So, let's start from the beginning of his, where we left off with him. So
he's the character I'm having the hardest time unraveling everything, just because there are so many layers to what's going on with him.
It could go either way with him.
Yeah.
It could go like he goes full empire. Actually, there's three paths for him. He could go full back into the empire somehow. He could go to the rebellion somehow.
Yeah.
I can see that happening.
I mean, people do good things for the wrong reasons all the
all
time.
The time.
You know?
All the time. Or there's a third path where it's like he's neither, but he somehow pinpoints Cassian as the reason for all of his problems, and he's just trying to get back at Cassian anyway.
I think there's another...
Ooh, a fourth.
Potential route.
He kills his mom and starts wearing her clothes. Bates Motel.
Not quite like that, but okay. I think the other route is extremism. Like,
yeah.
I think
sure.
With what he parallels in the real world and what we see play out just heartbreakingly too often. I think like I'm seeing ways in which he could get involved with Saul, maybe. Like,
yeah.
And we know that Saul does bad stuff.
Yeah.
Like he's extreme. I could see, or just he strikes out on his own.
It's interesting because like all of the interviews with the actor lately, Kyle Soler, he's got a big scruffy beard and longer hair. Maybe you're onto something because they're going to start filming season two very soon.
Is that what extremists look like?
And Saw Gerrera's crew. Yes.
That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, if Two Tubes could have a big beard, he would.
I mean, I feel like his two tubes are kind of like, I mean, they serve the same function as a beard, like aesthetically.
Yeah. Two Tubes is awesome. So is his twin brother.
It's a fantastic design, just like a character design.
Yeah, just great guy all around.
Do you like exchange holiday cards and stuff?
He's a good friend. So Cyril Karn stares out his window a lot, just in silence, wears really tight suits that like to choke him. He likes being choked a little bit. He likes that pressure on his neck.
He can't stop getting his clothes tailored. This is the second tailoring instance that they've spent time to specifically point out.
He's got an addiction. And now what's really, you can spot in his room, I think it's in episode 7 of the series announcement. There's some clone trooper action figures on his shelf.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's in universe, that's wild.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's bad vibes.
Dude really loves cereal.
Does he though? I feel like he just I feel like he just can't cook. And so that's what he has available. That's what his mom gives him.
Yeah. I don't know. That relationship with his mom, I don't know. It's not going to end well. I think he's going to kill her. I'm 100% serious. I think that's what's going to happen.
We've spent a lot of time on, like, with this kind of disembodied conflict between them.
Yeah.
Like, we have no context for that still. No. We just know they're at odds.
It's not a good relationship.
No, it's bad.
It's very
bad.
Bad
scene.
So let's talk about Deidre Miro real quick. She meets in a meeting with none other than Wolf Yularen, who is in A New Hope. He's one of the people in the council on the Death Star. Yep. But we got his backstory mainly in the Clone Wars, and he was a little bit in Star Wars Rebels. He's actually really good friends with Thrawn. Good friends. I think they have a podcast together. Yeah.
Yeah, they both have a couple SM7Bs stashed away on their respective ships.
They only record on Shure's.
Yeah.
Nothing
We're
else.
Not sponsored.
But
we could be.
Yes. We could. I mean, I'm open.
You know.
So I just thought it was really interesting, like, and Luthen confirms this later in the episode when he talks to Mon Mothma, but basically, because of what happened on Aldani, they start really clamping down on citizens and their rights and their privacy and all these different things, and they're really, really starting to tighten their grip because of what happened on Aldani. And then we kind of talked about this again on the Patreon, but I feel like this has to happen before the first season of Star Wars Rebels, or at least before the season finale of Star Wars Rebels, because what happens in that show and Ezra's broadcast to the galaxy and stuff, I don't think it's happened yet.
No. The Empire is already on the watch for rebellion by the time Rebels is happening. So I think, it's definitely after.
Yeah, but it would be cool to get a quick reference to, like, what about the Lothal sector in, like, one of these ISB meetings. Like, it's just wild. We've sent Callus there. It's not helping. He's just making it worse. Yeah.
Or even just, like, have that broadcast happen in the background in a public space somewhere or something.
Can you imagine Taylor Gray's voice in this episode, in this show? Just, hey, guys, it's me, Ezra.
Yeah, I could see
Come to Applebee's. Yeah. When I saw that commercial, I was like, oh my god, Ezra.
It's just Ezra reading that ad. I was like, oh, so that's just like, that's his voice.
Yeah. So basically, Deidre is able to get permission from Partagaz, who's kind of in charge of the ISB on a smaller level. Yularen's really in charge, but like he's the day-to-day person. She gets permission to like overstep her bounds because they're by sectors, and she argues like, listen, the rebels don't operate in the sectors that we create. I need to be able to pursue this. And so she gets that permission to pursue it. She makes some enemies doing that, but she wants to follow her hunch, and Partagaz is allowing her to do that because I think he's like, yeah, I think she's onto something. And so eventually it leads to her realizing, okay, Ferrix is where everything is at, and they take Salmon Pak, who is the one who has the tower in the back. They interrogate him, and then they take Bix, and they start to interrogate her. And Deidre ends up explaining that the Empire has a tendency to catch everything and just assume it's a fish, but she's going to find out for sure if, like, should we actually have you or not. She's a little more careful in her analysis.
Yeah.
And her torture is going to match that. And so we're introduced to a guy named Dr. Gorst.
Yeah. Dr. Worst.
Yeah. Gorst. So, like, this guy Yikes. He explains the origins of their torture recordings that Bix is about to experience. And so basically there was an outer rim moon called Dyson Frey, and the species living there protested against the construction of an imperial refueling center. The Empire committed mass genocide and proceeded with the construction. But while dying, the species, specifically the babies, let out a cry that caused a severe amount of emotional distress to the communications officers documenting the phenomenon. It killed them. So they, and what's awful, this just shows you how awful the Empire is. They're like, oh my God, that we could use that on people.
Yeah.
We've got their recording. And so like they sample that choral agonized pleading and put it on Bix to torture her. And just the, just number one, the acting, incredible.
On all accounts. Like,
especially that episode, like sound seems to be a big theme in that specific episode. So like, as she's about to start screaming, it transitions to them working in the prison and it's the drilling and stuff, but just an incredible, horrible scene.
Yeah, I am so glad that we did not actually hear the thing. Like, it's so much scarier imagining what Bix is hearing, you know, than what they could actually do with sound design and stuff. Yeah, the performances are insane. So, Deidre is played by Denise. Is it Gao or is it Goff? I should know this.
If you say both, it's fine.
There you go. But she is killing it as Deidre.
She's really good.
She just does a great job of giving you that, like, there's an ambition, and there's like she's still kind of trying to like prove herself and make her name and stuff like that, but she's also just like calculated, and she reminded me a lot of Hans Landa. Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah.
I don't know if we could, or, I don't know. I think I've said that on the podcast before.
It's fine. So it's the title of a movie.
Yeah. Also, that's in Star Wars now.
It is so, in Star Wars.
That's our rule.
And Andor is giving us a lot more words to work with.
We may have to revise our rule.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, also, yeah, Bix is amazing. Adria Arjan, Ariana?
Mm-hmm.
Ariana, is that how you pronounce that name? As you can tell, I'm amazing with names. She, yeah. It's hard to, like, give a believable reaction to a scene as awful as what she's going through in there, and I think she nailed it.
She nailed it.
Like, it was harrowing.
And I love, like, it was very to A New Hope, the way that the transit, like the door shut and then you saw the officer walk by. It was like almost exactly the way that it was with Leia when she was being tortured and the door shuts in A New Hope and then the stormtroopers walk by. It was like the same exact type of shot. And I was like, oh yeah, this feels like Star Wars. I like it. Also, when Deidre is talking to Bix, there's those like, I don't know if they're cameras. I don't know what those things are, but we saw them on the Death Star.
There's like six lenses all in kind of a rectangular pattern. Yeah. Yeah.
Also,
it was good
Star Wars.
It was good to see that again.
Yeah. Yeah. It was God, nice.
That was a Star Wars reference.
It was. It was. Yeah. Eventually, Cyril Karn, after he is questioned by Deidre and her cadre of helpers and stuff, he starts to like become obsessed with Deidre. To the point where he starts waiting for her at spots and then he actually catches her and they have this like exchange of like, I want the same thing you want. Oh no, don't walk away from me. And, like,
no,
grabs her arm.
She's like trying to leave and he is like coercively keeping her there.
I almost wonder if Deidre will use him as a weapon, like knowing like how he is and what type of person he is, to wield him in such a way of like, okay, go cause chaos, because obviously you are going to do that whether I do it or not, but I'm going to aim you at something.
I could definitely see that. I mean, that kind of goes in with the extremism thing. I mean, like the ISB's kind of real world parallel to the CIA. That's a yeah. tactic they've used historically.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
Okay, so Deidre basically says, okay, we've caught this rebel pilot outside of Stiergard. They update Partagaz about it, saying that he was heading to Kafrine, which is the Rings of Kafrine. We see that in Rogue One. That's where we actually meet Cassian at the beginning of the movie, and he kills that other guy. That's that same place, and we actually see it in this last episode, episode 10. So basically, they want to sabotage that whole thing and capture the rebels. It's a trap. And that's kind of, I mean, I don't know. I don't think there's much more with Deidre and Cyril from this last episode. Is there? I'm not missing anything.
I think that whole storyline is the most ambiguous to me. Like, I do not know what's about to happen.
Right.
Or not ambiguous, but it's the least predictable to me. Cause like I can kind of tell you maybe what Cassian's going to be doing the next couple episodes. You know, he's going to, meet back up with the rebellion, and then there'll be some kind of thing that happens for the finale. Maybe the ISB is finally going to catch up to him and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I have no idea what's going to happen with Cyril.
Yeah, I have no idea with Cyril. We'll see. I think he's going to kill his mom.
We'll see.
And Uncle Harlow is going to come in. He's going to kill him, too.
If I never hear about Uncle Harlow again, it'll be too soon.
Okay, so let's transition and talk a little bit about Mon Mothma and her storyline.
Yes.
Okay, so she initially was not aware of the Aldani mission, and this is where we learn about a vow being taken. Like, and this is mentioned several times throughout these four episodes. Mon Mothma took this vow. Luthen took this vow. We learn that Vel took this vow, who is cousins with Mon Mothma. Shocker. Didn't see that coming.
And Luthen's daughter, right?
I think so. So that would make Luthen and Mon Mothma related.
Related. Yeah.
If that's the case.
Yeah.
And then Lonnie took this vow. Yeah. Who else is should we take a vow right now? I feel left out.
I do want to know the wordage of that vow. I'm like, Alex, I vow to you to always uphold the...
Night gathers, and now my watch begins.
There you go.
That's my vow.
I will own no lands.
Father, no... Sire, no children.
And, well, already too late on your part.
Yeah, too late. So we got to create a new... We should have a Children of the Watch vow. Put it on our Patreon. Yeah. Like, you've got to say this as you join the Patreon.
Like you actually can't even sign up until... You say it.
You gotta send a video in.
Yeah.
And then, like, when you try to back out, we're like,
"No,
you remember the vow?
I mean, you took an oath, so
we'll have that conversation on that scary elevator platform."
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So
you don't want to make us meet you.
So
I want to know how the logistics of a remote controlled elevator work, because that seems. A little hazardous.
It is hazardous. So Luthen, though, like, okay, so with the Aldani mission, it wasn't approved by the other people who took the vow. They had no idea that Luthen and his assistant, or maybe not assistant, Clea, also very close to the name Leia. Too close, in my opinion. But they didn't know that they were going to do that. But Luthen wanted to force their hand. He wanted the Empire to overreact so they could get things rolling and started. But like, what we start to learn with Mon Mothma is, like, she's kind of feeling left out of these decisions. And then when she goes home with Perrin, we learn that a Chandrillan, where they're from, Chandrilla, custom is that they get married in arranged marriages, and they get married pretty young.
Yeah.
So they don't even, like, have opportunities to, like, court anybody, date anybody. They don't have those sort of opportunities. It's like, no, you're going to marry this person, and it's just the way it is.
And that's how it is.
So Perrin and Mon have an arranged marriage, and we learn that Perrin used to be sort of a bit of a firebrand. Like he actually used to like care about things and do things and be a normal person instead of this person who's just come wrapped up with Coruscanti society.
Right.
We learn, I guess we didn't know this before episode six. It's kind of hard to keep it all on track, but we learn that they have a daughter, Lita.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have this party where a guy named Tay Colma comes, and you said this on the Patreon before, but you still don't trust this guy, right?
So my issue has never necessarily been with him. I mean, I'm wary just because. Yeah, the thing that worries me is just adding another person. Period.
Just too many people.
That's just opening the door to something going wrong. You know, like I think. I don't
they didn't
have
take
any.
Them out.
Right, right. Yeah, she's going kind of off grid with this, you know. I think it's just anytime you're adding someone else in, unless you're doing it incredibly carefully and everything, it's just another opportunity for something to go wrong. He seems fine. I don't have any particular reason to distrust him.
I think I'm with you though. Like I don't know if I trust him. I'm still of the opinion, even though Perrin is a complete scumbag from what we've seen so far and the way that he treats Mon Mothma, there's going to be a point where I feel like he's going to protect Mon Mothma. I just feel that coming. Whether that be politically, I don't know, but I feel like that's coming. I also feel like their daughter is going to die.
We don't hear about her in Bloodline, which is a book that I feel like she would come up in, you know?
Yeah. I don't think she's going to make it, and that might be part of the reason Mon Mothma decides I'm just going to full out go the rebellion here.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I just have a bad feeling. But so Tay Colma basically is an old friend of Mon Mothma, and she goes to him during this party. He's like, okay, talking kind of in code, like my charity really needs help with moving money and like I need this. And so Tay is kind of tasked with, okay, how do we do that? And he has the idea, but the idea includes this gangster type person, not like Jabba the Hutt gangster, but more like Wall Street gangster.
Yeah, very white collar crime type.
Yeah. This guy, great name for bad guy, by the way. If he is a bad guy, I'm not sure. I think he is. No, he's definitely a bad guy. Based on what he says later. No.
I mean, it's like, I don't think he's an imperial sympathizer or anything like that, but there's a lot of different ways to be a bad guy.
True. Davos Golden.
Yeah.
That sounds like a name from Knights of the Old Republic.
It sure does. It seems like a name that would be in the random character name generator. Yeah. You know, so that's just a result
Davos
you could get.
Yep, that's it. What's that first soldier that helps you out and gives you everything and then just...
Oh, the
Trask Olgo, that's it.
Yeah, Trask.
He just Leroy Jenkins right towards that Sith Lord and dies.
Yep, I mean...
We love you, Trask.
Yeah.
Thank you for your sacrifice. So we can get off this ship.
Oh, man.
Okay, so
but
anyways.
Also... Potentially how you play, depending on how you play the game, he maybe shouldn't have done that.
True.
Because you can't go dark side.
True. So Davo, I'm kind of skipping ahead a little bit, but they end up meeting with Davo in this latest episode. And by the way, I just love how he has like 1940s type hair. Like,
yeah.
It feels very original Star Wars. Like, yeah, that look is right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think everything, like the costuming and styling on everyone in this show is awesome.
Yeah. So that whole arranged marriage thing comes back to full circle. They were setting it up for this moment of like, okay, yeah, I'll move the money for you. And he kind of hints like he has an idea of what they're doing, like what this is actually for. And he'll do it for free. And Mon Mothma's like, okay, nothing happens for free. Like, there's definitely nothing.
Especially with people who do money for a living.
Right. So they, she, okay, so what do you really want? And he's like, hey, my son, marry your daughter. I mean, what's wrong with that?
And, you know, yeah, I'm just like, trying to extort you for a little arranged marriage.
But here's the thing. So the reason I said I'm not sure if he's a bad guy at first is because that's the Strangillan custom.
Yeah, but Mon
Mothma just does it in a scummy way.
Yeah, and she's like not cool with it.
True.
So
right.
I don't think it's
that is true.
Also, not all customs are great.
No,
you know,
yeah,
some
agree,
need to change.
Okay? I agree. I'm just saying. Like, I don't know enough about this guy yet. But that was a bad moment from Davo.
It just made me feel very creepy crawly. There's a lot of moments in the last few episodes that have just made me very creepy crawly.
Yes, very creepy crawly. That moment.
It's the best way I can put it.
And so she totally shuts down the meeting. Like, no, absolutely not. This is not happening. You will not do that. Obviously, like, Lita has no say in it, right? Like, it's a terrible custom, like you said. But then, like, you're beholden to Davo. Like, that, there's that connection and that comes because of that marriage and stuff. And, like, he's looking for influence, too.
It's classic Game of Thrones stuff. That's what he wants. He's trying, you know, you just pawn off your kid, and then that's an alliance,
creepy.
You know?
Yeah, creepy stuff. Also, so we skipped ahead to that moment, but some really cool moments, like, in the Imperial Senate where she's passionately arguing against, like, all the new measures that the Empire's doing, and then the Imperial Senate, they're just like, the people who don't agree with her are shutting the lights off and shouting at her and stuff, like, you suck, you go back to Chandrilla with Perrin. No, actually, leave Perrin because he's cool, but you suck.
No, he's chill, actually, so he can party.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. Just that whole sequence was really cool. And then, of course, learning that Vale is her cousin. And that's where the vow thing comes up again when she's leaving. Yeah. That, so I'm wondering if, like, they recruited her. Like, I feel like Vale was part of the rebellion before Mon Mothma.
Yeah.
No, actually, that's not true. If we're going off the episode 3 deleted scene, if that's still canon, Mon Mothma is an original, like, from episode 3. She's doing this.
Yeah, but that's because Vel was a child. Luthen hadn't had her yet.
If that's the case, we'll see. I don't know. We'll see. But it just seems like...
How long has this been? How old is Vel? I can't remember.
The reason I said that is because it seemed like Mon Mothma is so hesitant right now to, like, take any sort of extreme actions. Obviously, she's afraid of getting caught and losing everything, mm-hmm. right? Vel is not there. Vel is super, like, Vel almost, to me, belongs in Saw Gerrera's partisan group.
Yeah, she's especially, like, so Senta, I think, is one of the most hardcore.
Oh, yeah. Don't mess with,
like,
her.
Right. I mean, you can definitely tell where, like, the priority lies between her commitment to the cause and then, like, her commitment to Vel, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she's gonna prioritize the cause every time.
Yeah So I don't know, just again going back to the prison theme, we see several times where Mon Mothma is also operating in this prison that she is in, whether it be her marriage, whether it be the Senate, her job, her duties as a, like, all of these different things are kind of like prisons to her, and she's got to operate in it and still try to support the rebellion, even despite all of those things. And she even says a line, I think it's in episode 7 or 8, where she says she actually learned a lot from Palpatine, in terms of he holds like an apple out for you and you don't even notice it because he's got in his other hand, the knife at your throat. Right. And like she takes that lesson and she's applying it now to everybody else. And that parallels what Luthen says at the end of this past episode.
Yeah. Using, you know, kind of doomed to use their own tactics against them.
Yeah. Okay. So we talk, I think that's everything on Mon Mothma that we needed to talk about.
Yeah, all of the dialogue and, like, especially the production design and everything. Just everything about her scenes is so polished, and it's just, I'm glad that, like, they're finally delivering on the promise that the prequel trilogy gave us of, like, this cool political drama and thriller. Yeah. And we're actually seeing it happen kind of like we would want that to, you know, happen.
Yeah. It's incredible, dude.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to watch early in the morning because the dialogue is so dense.
Yeah.
It's like, I just woke up. And you guys are doing like a Shakespeare play in front of me.
Yeah. I have been watching the show in the evenings pretty much because I'm watching it with Michaela a lot of the time. But that has changed the viewing experience a little bit for me. I think I much prefer it.
Yeah. But I would have, but I am directing our school musical this weekend. And so
yeah,
I had to wake up and do it. But it was worth it, man. It was really good. So let's talk a little bit about Luthen. First question I want to ask you, Mac. Mm-hmm. Who is Clea to Luthen, his assistant? Like, sometimes they seem to switch roles to me. Like, I'm not really sure who's in charge there.
Like, Clea might be in charge. I totally hold that as a possibility. Yeah. I think Clea could have recruited him just as easily as, you know, he recruited her.
There's definitely like a mutual respect. Like, she can talk to him in a way that nobody else can.
Right. And I mean, they're very different ages and stuff too.
Yeah.
Which is,
she seems much younger.
Right. And so it's interesting for them to have that dynamic still. I'm just like, who is Clea? Like, she's obviously a person who like commands respect and trust. And
she meets with Vale and is like, hey, find Cassian and kill him, which is why Vel and Senta were on Ferrix, and why Senta's right. still on Ferrix, kind of just monitoring everything that's going on. It's interesting. Yeah. And she's even the one that's like telling Luthen, like, you need to shut off the communication to Ferrix. You're getting too sloppy. Like, she just straight out tells him. My guess is Luthen recruited her, but like, for whatever reason, he respects her so much. It's almost like she is the blind spot check for him. Like, any blind spots that he has, she's always pointing them out, which is a good thing to have, especially with what he's doing. I'm really interested in her character of like, who are you? What are your origins? How do you do these things? Because you seem so mild-mannered in front of people. But right. then when you're like doing things just with Luthen or Vel, you're a killer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I could see her just kind of being in that role for the rest of the show, like
yeah.
us knowing as much about her as we do now, you know, by the end
and
of
I'm
it.
And I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that too. But I also wouldn't be surprised if we discover like she in particular made a really significant sacrifice or like has, you know, experience some kind of really serious loss that like maybe that's what Luthen kind of respects and the reason that they're kind of on that level playing field.
So in these episodes we see Luthen go talk with Saw Gerrera, which was really mm-hmm. really cool, right? We get
Loved
the introduced
Saw,
and they kind of talk about like, should we join up? That's basically the conversation, right? And what do you feel like the conclusion of that was, Mac? Like,
the conclusion was no. Luthen's like, you're insane now. I think that Forrest Whitaker did an amazing job of like splitting the I talked about this more in depth on the Patreon, but he split the difference between Clone Wars Saw and then Rogue One Saw.
Yeah.
But I think maybe that conversation was the first time Luthen had started to see Rogue One Saw come out.
Like, oh, God.
You know, he's like, oh, you've been out here too long. Like,
we're not on the same page anymore, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
You seem kind of angry. But, like, with Luthen's speech here at the end, I don't know. It's like, where's the line? And maybe we're supposed to ask that. Like, and these arbitrary lines that we create for ourselves, even in our own lives, of like, okay, I'm not going to cross this line, and that will keep me from being like so-and-so or doing or being like these other people. And we create these lines, but like, are they really working? Because it seems like when Luthen talks to Lonnie, which let's just go ahead and go there. Yeah. Lonnie, who is in the ISB, he is working directly with Deidre, directly with Partagaz, ends up going to Khafrin. I thought it was part of like, he's kind of sent there to like, he even argues that to Partagaz of like, I think we should keep doing what we're doing so that the rebels think that, you know, we're not on to them. And Partagaz is like, yeah, that's a good idea. So you right. think that Lonnie is going to do that, and he gets in the elevator, but then he puts in the little Bluetooth thing and he starts talking to Luthen. And that just completely shocked me. I was like, oh my gosh, like Luthen has been controlling Lonnie this whole time.
Right. Yeah. That I didn't see that coming. I figured that there was a large possibility something like that was going to happen just with, you know, how Luthen has operated thus far, or in kind of how the rebellion is right now. Like, I always thought it was possible that somebody was going to be from the Empire and helping out by the end. My money was not on Lonnie.
Well, but that's the thing, though, is like the way that it was being done, though, and the way that they talk about it, it's a bad guy tactic.
Yeah.
Of like, I guess it's more of a subtle threat of like, I know you have a daughter. How's she doing? There's a subtle threat there of like, absolutely. I know everything about you and I can end everything about you.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's like Luthen, I don't know. You just really see how he is doing exactly what he says later. You know, he's kind of condemned to use the Empire's methods against him.
Yeah. So he actually says that line of, because Lonnie's like, okay, I want to get out of this. Like, I have brought everything that I could possibly bring to you, but I do have a family and I don't want to be a part of this anymore because I feel like I'm going to get caught. Things are really starting to ramp up. I think this needs to end. And then Lonnie ends up asking that question to Luthen of like, okay, what have you done? Like, what have you sacrificed? Because I'm sacrificing everything. And like, Luthen's like, oh, you think you sacrifice everything? Right. You haven't sacrificed anything. And then he starts talking about like everything that he sacrificed. And he says that line, condemned to use the tools of my enemy to defeat them. And he just goes on this epic monologue. It's just like, this is the type of stuff I've always really wanted in Star Wars, because I feel like Star Wars in particular, especially George Lucas Star Wars, has always struggled with dialogue.
Yeah.
That's been its biggest weak point, I think.
Yeah. I mean, all of your favorite stuff from the original trilogy is like improv.
Right. Like, that's exactly right. I love you, I know. On improv. The spot.
Yeah. Yeah. How boring conversation anyway, shoots the communicator. Improv. Like, right. all the best lines were not supposed to be in the movie.
So to get something of this magnitude in Star Wars, and just the way Stellan Skarsgård delivers this, I mean, it was goosebumps, chills. It was just an incredible scene of like, it was menacing, but also heartbreaking of like, I feel for this guy. Like, I feel sorry that he has to go through this of like, he's never going to see the sunrise on this rebellion. Like, he knows he's going to die and probably die a horrible death for what right. he's doing, but it's worth it. It's worth every second of it to give everything, because he's laying the foundation so that others like Han, Luke, and Leia can go and be the heroes like we talked about at the beginning of this episode. It was an incredible speech. Like, this episode is definitely, episode 10 was my favorite so far of Andor.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And yeah, by far. Just, yeah, that monologue, it really resonated with me in a lot of ways, just because, like, I don't know if you've experienced this, but like, you get to a certain point in your life where you, if you're like a person who cares and wants to contribute to making the world a better place, like, you reach a point in your life where you can no longer ignore what's wrong with the world.
Yeah.
You know, like you just can't get away from it. Like, and so when he was talking about kind of like giving up his peace of mind and everything like that in order to, you know, work towards this thing that he'll maybe never see. Like there's, I don't know. It resonated with me, but it was also very inspiring in a morbid, heartbreaking way. You know,
I totally get that. Yeah,
yeah. It's complex, but
it's. Well, I mean, it's something I think that we're all challenged with in our lives. Of like, especially as I get older, I start to realize like, do I want to live a comfortable life?
Right.
I like being comfortable. I love being comfortable.
It's the easiest thing.
It is the easiest thing, but is it the best thing? Is it good for my daughter? Is it good for my family? Is it good for my future? Is it good for all these different things? Is it good for the world for me to always be comfortable? Like sometimes like I've got to sacrifice my own personal comfort to ensure that good happens.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think that's what you're getting at, and that's what Luthen's speech was getting at is we've got to make those decisions in our lives of, okay, what's actually important to us?
Yeah.
What is actually important to us? What's actually going to last too? You know, like, is it material things or is it something beyond that?
Yeah. Or even just like, do you want to live a life that is going to be fulfilling to you in the moment? Or do you want to make a legacy? And that's a complicated question, you know?
Especially complicated for Luthen because we had no idea he even existed.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so it's not about him. Like, it's not about his name.
Yeah. I wasn't really talking in terms of like recognition,
own recognition. Yeah.
You living a life that contributes, you know?
Right. Makes a difference.
Yeah.
Deep discussion. I don't think we've like, obviously,
we didn't scratch the surface of any of this, by the way. I don't know. I tried to keep it light, but like I'll probably write like a political treatise on everything that this
put it on the Patreon.
This this arc meant to me and everything. But yeah, it's heavy stuff. There's so many layers to dive into.
I can't wait to rewatch it all.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'm going to try, because I think the finale is on Thanksgiving break for me. I would really like to watch all of them somehow before the finale.
That'd be great.
Yeah. So I think that kind of wraps up our discussion of episodes 7 through 10. I hope you enjoyed this kind of different format. I think it worked better for just conversation because there's so many episodes. But you can get more in depth of our Patreon, patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch. We talk a little bit about 7 and 8 more on there and some ghost stories as well. It gets off the rails a little bit, but
yeah, that one was nuts.
We recorded on Halloween night. So,
ooh, spooky.
Golden Pentagon.
Pentagons.
Here's what we're going to do, because we are towards the end of Andor and we want to finish with a bang. We are actually going to finish out each episode instead of combining them together. We're going to do the next episode next week and do it kind of like our normal format, talk about it. And then the next episode as well, the finale, and we'll do that and keep those separate as we head towards the finale. So I can't wait. I think it's building towards something really big and epic in a non-explosion-y way.
Yes.
I think.
Like more in a character and tension-y way.
Yeah. So I'm really, really excited for it. And then, of course, we will be back full time for The Mandalorian Season 3 and kind of relaunch our YouTube a little bit as well for Mandalorian Season 3.
For those of you who haven't heard yet, this is sort of Children of the Watch Lite right now.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. L-I-T-E.
Yeah, just due to life circumstances and stuff, that's just what we needed to do for this season of Star Wars TV. But yeah, look for a lot more, and we'll be kind of kicking it back up into high gear for Mando Season 3.
Little Birdie told me, old Mac, that...
What's that, Alex?
Next trailer for The Mandalorian comes out on Christmas Day.
We got Christmas. Mando trailer on them Christmas, man.
You better believe it, boy.
I'm on eggnog, Mandalorian, Grogu.
Go Vols. All right.
Rocket Top.
Yes, sir.
Roll Tide.
You would say that.
I wouldn't.
I thought there was a connection there.
Yeah, I mean, Michaela got her PhD from there, but neither of us.
Did she say it?
Probably not. Nope.
Okay.
After living in Tuscaloosa for 4 years, if I never hear the word "Roll Tide" again, and I said "word" because that's a single word.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. It's actually with a W. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. You're a dogs fan. Ruff ruff ruff.
I am.
You bark at people.
I like music.
Are you excited about the World Cup? World Cup's coming up. It's kind of the closest thing we get to the Harry Potter thing. What is that? The
Triwizards Tournament?
Yeah.
No. How did I?
Not that.
Oh, not that.
The thing before that where they're on brooms. What is that called? My brain's not working.
Quidditch.
Quidditch.
I am not a Harry Potter guy. How am I the one pulling these?
I like Harry Potter and I couldn't think of it.
It's all right. Yeah, it's all right. I've read all the books.
I like it.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's fine.
Stop grilling me. It's fine. What are you... Alex,
Voldemort,
drop it.
Voldemort's a great Sith Lord.
Dude, leave me alone. It's fine.
Okay.
It's fine. Okay?
All right.
It's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine.
All right. I think we're done.
We need to go.
It's late. It's maybe the latest we've recorded.
Maybe the latest. I'm getting punchy. Cool. Yep. Follow us on the stuff. Look for the next episode. Patreon, all that. But until next time.
COT Watch. Social media. Bye.
Cue the watch.